This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Guess who's back again. Shady's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back.
Second hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, some thoughts on Trevor Lawrence as we talk more about some quarterbacks. A follow-up on the Kyler Murray story as well. And can you ever wear your own jersey? Get to that coming up. Plus, the ACC. More preseason picks. What it means for the conference. We'll get to that and a whole lot more throughout the afternoon. One of maybe your childhood favorites is going away here on a Throwback Thursday. Got plenty to do. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. Search ESPN Radio Charleston however you listen to your podcast. And the podcasts are also always available online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Click on our show page. Find the podcast there. You can also leave a comment for the show, charlestonsportsradio.com, by clicking on our show page. Or get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays. You can always text the show, 843-608-1734, or give us a call, 843-721-9500. Speaking of calls, just got another call from one of those robocalls. Is there anything worse? Right, back in the day, you used to think telemarketers were bad. Back in the day, now you get like 8 of those calls a day about your car warranty. Hey, you have a chance to save a life and give blood with American Cross American Red Cross Blood Drive going on Tuesday after the weekend at Cruise Subaru next Tuesday, August 2nd, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. All donors receive a complimentary certificate for $35, good for auto service, parts, or accessories at Cruise Subaru, plus a $10 e-gift card and a chance to win a Shark Week merchandise pack, plus a free pint of custard from Culver's. Man, we got a lot going on here. Appointments are preferred, but walk-ins are welcome. It's going on Tuesday, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. So to register, go over to redcrossblood.org and use the sponsor code CRUISE. It's written in all caps on this sheet, so that may need to be in all caps when you put that code in. But redcrossblood.org, sponsor code CRUISE for the blood drive going on Tuesday, August 2nd, next Tuesday, Cruise Subaru, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. And as I said, $35, good for auto service. $10 e-gift card, a chance to win Shark Week merchandise, and a free pint of custard from Culver's. Now, we talked about this with Trent. Trent is out today. Anderson's on the board. Anderson, are you into Shark Week at all?
You know, I used to be. I used to really like it when I was a little bit younger, middle school, so 10 or 12 years old. But, you know, it's gotten really gimmicky over the years, I feel like. And, yeah, it's kind of gone downhill, I think. But I used to be a big fan of it.
Trent was just railing about how gimmicky it was because of my Impractical Jokers. They were on Shark Week the other night. And it was a little hokey, right? Some of it's scripted. They're doing bits. At one point, there was like a fake animated red shark with a mustache. Like, you know, what do you expect? It's the Impractical Jokers, so he didn't appreciate that. What about, we're going to talk a little ice cream later on Throwback Thursday. You ever have custard?
I'm a fan of custard, yeah. Mm. I don't have it all that often, but, you know, what is the difference between custard and pudding?
I have no idea. I don't know. I don't think I've ever actually had custard before. So I don't know. I can't eat ice cream anymore either. So I just stick to my frozen yogurt.
What's wrong with ice cream?
Nothing's wrong. I love ice cream. It just doesn't sit with me anymore.
Ah.
You'll find out as you get older, right? Your body changes. There's just certain things you can't have anymore. And at a certain point, I woke up one day and, okay, I can't eat ice cream anymore. There it goes. And believe you me, I tried. But you have a couple of bad experiences. You're like, all right, I'm cutting that out of my diet. So I haven't had ice cream now in 8 years. About 8 years this month. I remember the last few times. They were bad experiences. I remember the last few times I had ice cream. So, yeah, it sucks getting old. I can't eat ice cream. Ice cream. What more? I was talking about this with a neighbor the other day. The neighbor, I was carrying what looked like a pizza box. It actually wasn't, but I wasn't going to correct her. And she said, oh, man, pizza. She said, nothing cheers you up like pizza. And I said, yeah, I think pizza is the most universal thing. But then she also said wine, and I think we also came up with chocolate or maybe ice cream as well. Like, those are the like when you're in a bad mood, you need a pick-me-up, or someone's feeling down, pizza is always going to get you going. Nobody dislikes pizza. Yeah, maybe wine if you're of age or your drink of choice. And then chocolate, but maybe more specifically ice cream. Whenever people are feeling down, right, especially movies, shows, what do you always see? Them sitting in bed eating ice cream. Ice cream, it's the best. Love ice cream. Just can't have it. But we're going to talk more about ice cream later on this hour. Right now, let me talk about a little more quarterback play. We'll get to the ACC coming up. Trevor Lawrence. I want to touch on Trevor Lawrence for a moment. You know, I think Trevor Lawrence, it'll be interesting. We look back at this past year with Urban Meyer, it's such a disaster. It could be a blessing or it could be a curse. I said this at the time as it was unfolding last year, that it could be so bad you could stunt the growth of a quarterback. We've seen that before. You know, like maybe David Carr with the Houston Texans. It was such a disaster that he could not overcome the early struggles. And for him, it was the offensive line. He was getting sacked so much and was like once bitten, twice shy. He was shook the rest of his career. The fear that is that when it comes to Trevor Lawrence, you know, Urban did such a poor job, or the Jaguars did such a poor job, that you already stunted his growth. It's like a kid when you're trying to raise a child. Something you do when they're really young may not seem like the biggest deal at the time. It could alter everything. For years to come, it could stunt their development, their growth, or even just certain things that it helps build their personality, or, you know, growing up, when they become an adult, some of the trauma, whatever it may be. A lot of things that we do now or the way we are as adults are traced back to whatever may have happened or what your childhood was like. For Trevor Lawrence, it could take just that 1 year. It was such a disaster last year that he played terribly, right? He was bottom five in the league in QBR and had more interceptions than touchdowns and went about a month without a 200-yard game. It was not good for the number one pick. Granted, on a bad team with a head coach that didn't belong, but it could have been such a disaster that you can't really come back from it. It sets him up to fail the rest of the way here. Or the positive could be that if Trevor Lawrence does start to play well, you know, the good thing is he had a fall guy last year, unintentionally so, and probably wasn't preferred. But Urban Meyer was such a disaster, couldn't make it through the first year. When we think back on that year of the Jaguars, you're going to think more about Urban Meyer. And Trevor Lawrence's struggles, you're going to put under that Urban Meyer umbrella. Right? Urban Meyer is like the fall guy. You put the blame on him. You say, yeah, no wonder Trevor Lawrence didn't have a good year. Look at his coach. Look at what he was dealing with, Urban Meyer. And while oftentimes it's not great for a quarterback to change coaches and systems after just 1 year, for Trevor Lawrence, obviously, it's addition by subtraction, and what an upgrade to get somebody like Doug Peterson, who played the position, who has coached the position, who has won a Super Bowl as a coach before, who has worked with young quarterbacks. I loved this move by the Jaguars this offseason. I think it's a big upgrade for Trevor Lawrence. And there are a couple of quarterbacks that are dealing with this right now, a couple of young quarterbacks. Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence are both in the same camp. Justin Fields just went through a coaching change as well after his first year. The difference is, I think the Bears went in the wrong direction. I think the Jaguars went in the right direction. For the Bears, you go from an offensive coach. Now, look, was he the best coach? No, he wasn't, but at least it was an offensive coach who got to the playoffs with Mitch Trubisky multiple times before. And you replace him with a first-time head coach who's on the defensive side of the football and an inexperienced coaching staff on the offensive side of the football, guys who have never done it before. Not great for Justin Fields. For Trevor Lawrence, the screw-up committed by the Jaguars was last year when you brought in Urban Meyer. And I'm guilty of it. Look, I'm not going to try to revise history. You could go find the shows, podcasted, and my opinions at the time. I actually did like the move. I thought it was going to work out at the time. I thought Trevor Lawrence could have a successful first season. I thought the Jaguars could surprise some people. I do think Urban Meyer is one of the best college football coaches of all time. I thought that could translate pretty well to the NFL. He knows football, or so it seemed. I'm not going to try to tell you. I'm not going to lie to you and tell you I thought something different a year ago now that hindsight's 2020. No, I was dead wrong. I thought it was going to be a good match. But I would also say that if you're the Jaguars, Trevor Lawrence is the most important player you've ever had in your franchise. And as much as I like Urban Meyer as a college coach and as much success as he's had, I don't know if I would take that big of a gamble for my star quarterback to bring in Urban Meyer to the NFL for the first time, hoping it works out. When the track record has shown, a lot of great college coaches struggled in the NFL. I think I'd rather have a sure thing, a veteran, a guy who's done it before, who's worked with quarterbacks, so I know what I'm going to get. instead of hoping that Urban Meyer will come in and have success. That as my quarterback's learning on the job, so too is his head coach. I don't like that. It's the same thing with Justin Fields now this year. Justin Fields is still trying to learn the ropes. You're going to have a bunch of coaches trying to figure it out too. I don't like that. Where's the support? Everybody's figuring out together. Justin Fields is going to be looking around saying like, oh, what do we do here? I don't know. I'm trying to figure it out myself. I'm still trying to learn. For Trevor Lawrence, that was last year at Urban Meyer. But I do think the Jaguars, right, like in Dumb and Dumber, totally redeemed themselves with Doug Peterson. Now, maybe this won't work out either, but on paper, it's a much smarter move. And it's a big upgrade on paper to go from Urban Meyer to Doug Peterson. And we've seen this a lot for quarterbacks that, again, you typically wouldn't want to change up a head coach after just 1 year of a quarterback. It's not great for their development, but go back and look just in recent years. Jared Goff started off with Jeff Fisher. We were calling him a bust. Then came Sean McVay, year two. And Goff suddenly was an MVP candidate. Baker Mayfield started off with Hugh Jackson, who was 0-16. He went 1-31 over two seasons. Baker wasn't great early on, but who was the fall guy? Hugh Jackson. Got run out of town. We thought, this guy's a joke. And then who replaced him? Freddie Kitchens, first-time head coach. Same idea. We thought, wow, this guy's a joke too. And then Kevin Stefanski came in, got a good coach, and Baker made the playoffs. Last season, things fell apart, maybe because of the injury. Mitch Trubisky is another one. Was he the greatest quarterback? No. But he played a lot better after that first year. He had John Fox his first year. They fired Fox after that first season. You think, oh, this is not good for a young quarterback. But what did they give him? An offensive coach in Matt Nagy. And while Trubisky wasn't great, he did make the playoffs multiple times. And his numbers are probably better than you are led to believe. Not great. Probably shouldn't be a starter in this league. But we did see improvement, especially that first year, when they went from John Fox to then an offensive coach running things. Jalen Hurts is another one. Now, look, Jalen Hurts went from offensive coach to offensive coach, but maybe it just wasn't a good fit. And that first offensive coach was Doug Peterson, who I was just praising. But with Doug Peterson, Jalen Hurts, didn't look great. Remember, Jalen Hurts got benched his rookie year. Got benched for, I don't remember who it was, somebody who doesn't belong in the league. And then Nick Sirianni comes in last year, and Jalen Hurts, you know, looks much better, looks pretty good, gets the Eagles to the playoffs. And what Sirianni did that was great was the team started out slow last year. And then he said, you know what? I'm going to change up our style, and I'm going to mold it around our quarterback. And they became the best running team in the league the second half of the year, went on a winning streak, made the playoffs. I think Doug Peterson can be a good coach. I think he can work well with Trevor Lawrence. I think he was a bad fit with Jalen Hurts. Nick Sirianni seems to be the better fit. Justin Herbert, similar. He had Anthony Lynn first year, fired him after his first year. Then Brandon Staley came in last year. Now we're talking about Justin Herbert's a top five quarterback in the league. And the other one I'll give you from just the past about, you know, 5-10 years, Derek Carr. Dennis Allen, a defensive coach, was his head coach when he began, Derek Carr. And he did not play great his first year. And then they replaced him with, I think it was Jack Del Rio, and in year two, Derek Carr was a Pro Bowler and had over 30 touchdown passes his second season. And he signed a huge contract early on, and we were talking, at one point, he was the highest paid quarterback in the league. And we were talking about, Derek Carr, is he elite? So my point with these examples are we've seen a lot of guys have bad first years. Head coach gets replaced. You think that's not a good look. They already have to replace the head coach. This quarterback has to go through a second coaching staff in 2 years. That's not good for their growth. And yet we see with that change, these guys get better. Maybe because they continue to grow from year one to year two, but also they get a better coach. Jared Goff, Baker Mayfield, Mitch Trubisky, Jalen Hurts, Justin Herbert, Derek Carr, all had coaching changes after year one, all got better. So for Justin Fields, for Trevor Lawrence, that's what you try to point to and be positive. Like, hey, maybe that can happen with us too. And you better hope it does if you're a Bears fan, a Jaguars fan, or a member of those organizations. But when it comes to the Jaguars, I like that move. I think that's an improvement to go from Urban Meyer to Doug Peterson. I think Trevor has a chance at least to be in that same category. And when you think back, look, things didn't work out for Baker in Cleveland. But when you think back to the beginning, you think, oh, yeah, well, I mean, Hugh Jackson was his coach. We mock Hugh Jackson more than Baker for those struggles. Similar for Jared Goff, right? You make fun of Jeff Fisher instead of Jared Goff. Even Mitch Trubisky, like John Fox, was his first head coach. Same idea here. When we think back on Trevor Lawrence's first year, especially if he improves and he starts to play better, you won't say like, yeah, but he was really bad as a rookie. No, you'll say, yeah, but that's because Urban Meyer was his head coach. Remember that disaster he had to start with? What an embarrassment with Urban Meyer running the Jaguars. So for Trevor Lawrence, it's a blessing and a curse. It's not great to have a first-time head coach in the NFL who doesn't know what he's doing and can't help you. You know, have that immediate growth when you come in the league kind of puts you behind the eight ball. But at least he had a fall guy. He had somebody that we can all blame. Tua has this a little bit. Now, Tua, it was not after his first year. Right? But you just fired Brian Flores. You bring in Mike McDaniel as an offensive coach. And if McDaniel can get the most out of Tua, again, it's not after his first year. This is going to be his third season. He's 2 years in. But if McDaniel can get the most out of the Tua, you kind of forget all the other stuff. I heard somebody say it about Jimmy Garoppolo yesterday and comparing Garoppolo to movies where, right, you only care about the ending. A bad movie can become good with a great ending. Vice versa. A great movie can become bad with a terrible ending. We only care about the endings. We have recency bias in that sense. And if things end poorly, a lot of times you forget all the great times you had. In fact, this happens a lot in relationships. I would always say this to friends of mine. Right? They'd get dumped or they'd break up with somebody, things would end poorly, and they would talk bad about that person that they were in a relationship with. It's like, hold on, wait a minute. Just 2 days ago, before you broke up, you were talking about how great they were. Now suddenly, right, your ego got hurt a little bit, or you have hurt feelings, you got dumped, whatever it is, and now they're the worst person in the world. Don't forget about all the good times you had just because things ended poorly. Just because a relationship doesn't end in marriage, right, doesn't mean like it was a waste. No, you still had plenty of good times together, good experiences. Life's all about experiences. If Trevor Lawrence can turn things around, Justin Fields as well, Tua, all these guys. You only remember the ending. You don't remember that they were Peyton Manning was terrible when he first came in the league. Troy Aikman, too. You don't really talk about it. You just focus on the great ending. So for Trevor Lawrence, he has every opportunity still. He's only 1 year in to turn things around. I think the Doug Peterson hire is good. And I also think that the idea of Urban Meyer may not have been good for Trevor Lawrence in his first 12 months in the league, but you know what? In another sense, if Trevor starts to play well, Urban's just a fall guy. You point back, and no wonder Trevor stunk, because of Urban Meyer. And you kind of wipe that first year out of your memory. You wipe the slow beginnings from your thoughts of Trevor and just remember when he became a Pro Bowl quarterback eventually, by year 3, 4, 5, whatever it may be. So Urban Meyer was a disaster for Trevor. Also could be an opportunity. Now, while we're on the subject of quarterbacks, let's stay here for a moment and talk about a couple of other quarterbacks. First, in regards to Kyler Murray. Look, we spent some time earlier this week talking about the ridiculous contract clause of Kyler Murray, who needs to study film each week. The internet is amazing. And I've always said this before. My favorite website online is Reddit, because you can go on to Reddit and you will find things there that people online will, like if there's ever some sort of investigation in the news and you're reading about, go on to Reddit. These people find things that you don't see anywhere else. It's amazing what people on the internet can come up with and do and figure out, and the different theories and even evidence they'll find online. So I say all that because Kyler Murray, we got this report about his contract with the independent study clause. He's got to watch film. Somebody online did a little bit of a case study where they went back and they looked at the release, and maybe it's just coincidence, but they looked at the release of Call of Duty video games and compared it to Kyler Murray's numbers. And it matches up that whenever the new Call of Duty comes out, Kyler Murray's numbers get worse that year. That's when he starts to fade. Maybe just a coincidence, but the theory, of course, is that when the new video game comes out, what do you think Kyler's doing? And he's not paying as much attention to his football or his team or working as hard, or he's dividing up his attention. He doesn't play as well. It was the same concern with Baker last year when I think it was Call of Duty for Baker as well. In the first month of the game, he already put in like 100 hours of playing online. It's one of the reasons why the Browns were very upset with him. Now, I grew up playing video games, but we talked about it a few weeks ago when the Baker Mayfield story was released. I could never see myself playing 10 hours of video. The other one is DeAndre Ayton in the NBA. Said the same thing. He stays up to like 5 a.m. every night playing video games. I can't do that. Never could do that. Even as a kid, I played a lot of video games. I could never play for like 10 hours straight all day long. I just don't have that in me. But I found that really interesting that when you talk about Kyler Murray, somebody online said, wait a minute, hold on. We can directly tie his struggles to when the new Call of Duty video games come out. Because anybody who plays video games, you know when that new game comes out, you got to go get it the first day. You're so excited. You play it all weekend long. I'm guilty of that growing up. My brothers and I, or my buddies and I, you go get even the new Madden or whatever, the new Halo, whatever, and you play it all weekend long. You have a sleepover and you stay up all night and you play it. That's the one time that I could play video games for a long time, when you get that new game you've been looking forward to. But after that first weekend or the first week, kind of wears off. I don't understand these guys that play 10 hours of video games a night. Can't do it. Especially if you're Baker Mayfield, you're a married man. But I found it fascinating, and I wonder if that's what's behind all this. That somebody on the internet discovered this, and if they did, I'm sure the Cardinals know that when that new video game drops, yeah, he football now goes on the back burner. He's playing Call of Duty instead of watching his film. He's more interested in the new video game. And the other quarterback we have to talk about is Russell Wilson. Look, I'm not a Packers fan. I hate the Packers. I'm a Vikings fan. But even I appreciated Aaron Rodgers showing up as Nicolas Cage's character from Con Air. And this is the big thing, right? Guys have to show up and show out when they arrive at training camp. Russell Wilson showed up in essentially like a tank. He was in like one of those army jeeps. It was huge. But the most notable thing was that Russell Wilson was wearing his own jersey. He was wearing like a throwback Broncos jersey of Russell Wilson, number 3 with Wilson on the back. There are a couple of things you can't do. You can't give yourself your own nickname. And you cannot wear your own jersey in public. You can't do it. If you're Russell Wilson, if you're any athlete, you can't be walking around wearing your own jersey. It is so corny. Here is former NFL defensive back Ryan Clark, who obviously knows a thing or two, right, about playing in the league, being a professional athlete. Here is Ryan Clark this morning on ESPN talking about Russell Wilson showing up to training camp for the photo ops wearing his own Russell Wilson jersey. You wear that jersey for the games. You don't wear it when you show up to training camp. Here is Ryan Clark this morning.
So we talked about Russell Wilson a little bit yesterday, and Fred's always been on Russell Wilson's side. But I think these are some of the things that I find strange, you know. He could wear that jersey on Sunday, even Monday, or Thursdays now on the field over shoulder pads when you're playing, because all of us know your number and we know your name. I'm trying to find something nice to say, Molly, actually, and I don't have anything nice to say about it. And it would all seem like insults, and I don't want people to think I'm jumping on him. So what I'm going to say is he could choose to wear whatever the hell he wants. Yeah. I would not wear my own number. I was also not a future Hall of Famer. And so maybe he feels he's done enough where he can actually make this look cool.
Ryan Clark this morning taking the high road with Russell Wilson. I won't be as high up on that road. You can't do it. You can't wear your own jersey. Can't give yourself a nickname. Can't talk in the third person. And you can't wear your own jersey around. I've always supported and defended Russell Wilson. I've always thought he's one of the more underrated quarterbacks. We were talking about quarterback tiers the other day. Executives in the league put him in the second tier. I don't know if he's fallen that far. He may still be a top-tier quarterback in the league. We'll see this year. I'm a big Russell Wilson guy. People close to me know it. We have football debates. I always defend Russell Wilson. I can't defend him here. And I also can't defend against the idea that he is the corniest star we've ever had. He is so corny. His different tweets, the videos he puts online, even his press conferences. There's a reason why the Legion of Boom, right, all hated this guy in Seattle. They're thinking, you're paying him over us? This corny guy? Right, people think he's kind of fabricated. He's not authentic. He's a little too polished. Certainly comes off that way. But this is so lame. You cannot show up in your own jersey. And it's not even like the game-worn jersey. It's not like he's showing up to practice with the jersey on that he's going to wear out onto the field. Like, hey, I'm here, ready to go. No, he shows up in an alternate uniform that you buy like in a store. He went to Dick's, got a jersey, and now he's wearing it to training camp. Can't do it. Don't give yourself your own nickname. Don't refer to yourself in the third person, and don't show up anywhere if you're a professional athlete with your own jersey on. Incredibly corny and lame, and Russell Wilson's the lamest of all the stars we've ever had. Great quarterback, incredibly corny and lame off the field. When we come back, more preseason accolades announced for the ACC. We'll touch on that next. The Mara Midday Show, right here on ESPN Radio.
Overhead Door Company, the original garage door company, serving you for over 90 years. Call 843-767-0028 or overheaddoorco.com. Overhead Door Company of Charleston, proud to open hour 2 of the Mara Midday Show. Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Mara Midday Show.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Some more takeaways from the ACC preseason rankings. We'll get to that here on the Moore Midday Show in just a moment. Speaking of which, we have the Southern Conference Media Days going on, and the Citadel picked to finish eighth in the Southern Conference Coaches Poll for football this fall. The Citadel also picked to finish ninth in the media poll. So not great there, towards the very bottom of the Southern Conference. But that's okay. That's how we like it at the Citadel, because then you get to put that chip on your shoulder, play underdog, and prove everybody wrong. Pull off a bunch of upsets. And the Bulldogs' first game, I think it's 5 weeks from today. Right, we're 5 weeks out from the start of the college football season in the Citadel, heading out on the road for week one, 5 weeks from today. They'll play on Thursday night at the end of August. So looking forward to that. Now, the ACC, they're also doing all their preseason stuff because of their media days. Yesterday, we went through the preseason polls, same things, the standings, projecting the standings for the ACC. Then we also got news on the individual awards for the ACC. NC State's quarterback Devin Leary was voted ACC Preseason Player of the Year. He got 40 of the votes. Then you had Wake Forest quarterback Sam Hartman get 30 of the votes. Miami's quarterback Tyler Van Dyke finished third with 21 of the votes. Then you have Virginia quarterback Brennan Armstrong. Then you have Malik Cunningham, so on and so forth. So a couple of things that stand out here. If you listen to the show, you know, always talking about quarterbacks. We've talked a lot about quarterbacks today because the quarterback is the most important position. And if you want to be good, you got to have a good quarterback in college football or the NFL. So when I look at the ACC, this is what I've been pushing all offseason about the ACC, that I think this conference could be a lot more interesting this year than people are giving it credit for. Now, maybe Clemson will just simply dominate and their defense will shut down all these quarterbacks and they'll run the table. Maybe. But the concern number one for Clemson, their quarterback's not on this list. He didn't get the votes. Instead, you have NC State's quarterback, followed by Wake Forest's quarterback, followed by Miami's quarterback, followed by Virginia's quarterback, followed by Louisville's quarterback. So, at minimum, right, that puts DJ, what, six? I'd also take Boston College's quarterback ahead of him. I don't think he's in the top six in his own conference. Not great. It's concerning. Could be troubling. Now, maybe Klubnik steps in this year, and he's better than all of them anyways. We'll see. The other takeaway drives home the point I always make, though, about how it's all about quarterbacks. Now, we could have a chicken and the egg conversation about how most of these awards are won by quarterbacks anyways, so when they're trying to predict or pick, you know, who's going to win the award anyways, you might as well go quarterback because that's what we do. And then it's a whole, like, little cycle here that, well, yeah, I expect a quarterback's going to win, and then you end up voting for a quarterback anyways, and yada, yada, yada. But the top five vote-getters in the ACC for Player of the Year, all quarterbacks, because quarterback is that important. And it takes me to my third takeaway from this. The quarterback that tops the list, Devin Leary. It's what I've been saying about NC State all offseason. I'll continue to pump those tires up. NC State, right, finished second last year. They bring back more starters than anybody in the conference. Experienced coach, no changes on the coaching staff. Quarterbacks coming back, Devin Leary, who last year had seven touchdowns for every one interception, and half of those interceptions were, you know, kind of chuck them up. They were arm punts, essentially. Played really well. Better than a lot of people thought. Maybe didn't get noticed. Good enough to beat Clemson a year ago. Now he comes back. He is the preseason player of the year. So you give me NC State with more continuity than any team in the conference, with potentially, on paper, the best player and the best quarterback in the conference, experienced coach who's been there a long time, a team that was already pretty good last year, most guys coming back on the defense from a year ago. Their defense finished second behind Clemson. Right, star quarterback coming back, continuity on the coaching staff. There's a lot of things to like about this NC State team. And then you have Sam Hartman right after that. Right, Wake Forest, I think, is the other best team behind Clemson in that division, or behind Clemson and NC State, I should say. Tyler Van Dyke, most votes of any player in the Coastal. I think Miami wins the Coastal. I also told you Virginia may be a little underrated this year. Brennan Armstrong finished after him in terms of votes. So number one, quarterbacks are most important. Number two, don't sleep on NC State because of their quarterback, Devin Leary, and those other factors. And number three, it's the concern for Clemson. The defense could be really good. Will Shipley could have a big-time year. Maybe Clemson doesn't skip a beat with their new coordinators. But if you want to win big, you want to go win a national championship, you want to compete at the highest level, you need that top-end quarterback. I don't think Clemson has it. If you look at the NFL, you go back and you look, usually the team that wins the division usually has the best quarterback, if not top two. The team that finishes in last place usually has the worst quarterback. Because even like Aaron Rodgers can make up the difference on a bad team. Right? Like even a Patrick Mahomes, if you put these guys on a bad team, Deshaun Watson won the division with Houston a couple of years when they didn't have a whole lot around him. Bad quarterbacks will make up the difference. Not often do you see a good quarterback. They say a bad quarterback will make up the difference. A good quarterback will make up the difference. Not often do you see a good quarterback will finish in last place. Every once in a while, it does happen. But rarely is the best quarterback in that division going to be on the last place team. You get the quarterback, you get a chance. And so my point being, when you look at Clemson and you tell me like, maybe they have the seventh best quarterback in the conference. Well, that's not great. Because usually the standings kind of match up with the power rankings of the quarterbacks or pretty close to it. Not always the case. Like Clemson last year probably had a better record than they should have if you were just simply looking at quarterback performance across the conference. But this year, there's some interesting quarterback play. Everybody in Clemson's division is bringing back their quarterback from last year. So they're all going to be experienced. There's no new faces. Guys that are a little bit older, that have played in their systems, that have starts under their belts. And a lot of them better than DJ. It's my concern. Now, look, I still pick Clemson to win the ACC. But I do think the ACC could be more interesting this year than people believe. We always write off the ACC. It's Clemson and nobody else. Who cares about that conference? And it's probably still true. Last year when Clemson took a step back, right, we largely ignored the ACC. Pittsburgh and Wake Forest were never in the playoff contention. But this conference could be intriguing. NC State could be tough. We'll see if Wake Forest follows up last year. I think Miami will be much improved. We'll see about Pittsburgh if they can play like they did a year ago. I think Virginia could be a little underrated. I think Boston College could be slept on. I think Louisville with Malik Cunningham could be interesting to watch. UNC maybe will be better this year under Mack Brown. There's a lot of intrigue in that conference and a lot of good quarterbacks. That's the thing about college football this year. A lot of good quarterback play. And I think football, you're only as healthy as your quarterbacks are. Right, the NFL went through this a few years ago where a bunch of quarterbacks got injured and you had to watch backups like Derek Anderson play on Monday Night Football. And that's when the NFL altered some of the rules. They said, nope, we can't do this again. We got to keep our quarterbacks on the field. You're only as good as your top quarterbacks. And when you look at college football this year, there are some really intriguing quarterbacks. Long list. This past quarterback draft class, not great. This year, if you just want to focus on the draft class, right, Bryce Young, C.J. Stroud, Anthony Richardson, Tyler Van Dyke, Jaren Hall at BYU, Grayson McCall at Coastal, Will Levis and Hendon Hooker in the SEC along with Spencer Rattler. And then in the ACC, maybe a Slovis, right, Hartman, Jerkovic, the other ones I already mentioned. And those are just draft eligible. That would be even excluding somebody like a Caleb Williams. A lot of interesting quarterbacks in the country, especially in the ACC and the SEC this year, which should make those conferences specifically a lot of fun. But a couple of things that stood out from the personal preseason awards in the ACC. Now, with all that said, let's take it with a grain of salt. So what I always say about these preseason rankings, preseason awards, I usually don't care. Preseason watch lists, I really typically don't care what you choose. It's always like giving out the awards for movies before actually seeing them or just based on the trailer. Right, you watch a trailer and think, that's the movie of the year. We have no idea. You have to actually go there, sit down, watch the film, give it the 2 hours, and then, it wasn't as good as I thought. Same idea. We have to actually watch the games, see what's the point of a watch list or preseason awards when none of these guys are taking the field. We have no idea what's going to happen this year. It's all just based off of assumptions and guess. Just like when you see that trailer, that commercial on TV, you assume like, I don't think that's going to be very good. Sometimes you're pleasantly surprised. Vice versa. You see a trailer and you think, wow, that movie looks great. Then you watch it. It's terrible. We can't just give out awards based off of what you think off a trailer. Just like it's pointless. It's a pointless exercise to give out awards and such based off of what we think is going to happen this year in football. We really don't know. But we do have an idea, and the idea is some good quarterbacks in the ACC. Maybe some more depth in that conference. And DJ is certainly not one of the top quarterbacks. We'll see how things play out this year in that conference. When we come back, it is a throwback Thursday. So when we come back, we have to talk about maybe one of your favorite treats that is sadly disappearing. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. It is a throwback Thursday, and we got some sad news this week that I saw a lot of people reacting to. The news of maybe one of your favorite treats no longer continuing, being taken away, being discontinued in the ice cream world. Before we dive into all that, you know, growing up, I don't remember ice cream trucks being around. I grew up in the suburbs. I don't really remember ice cream trucks being around, maybe. Now, where I currently live now, I see an ice cream truck every once in a while. I hear the music. I even may go running outside a little bit. I can't eat ice cream anymore, but even just to take a look. In fact, now sometimes you hear that music. I'll go outside. I'll see it's one of these new, they got these new like adult beverage ice cream trucks where you're getting like frozen drinks from what is essentially like an ice cream truck. And we have all sorts of these different trucks, not even food trucks, but you have like the Kona Ice, right, where you get the flavored ice now from a truck. We got all sorts of different trucks. You could get everything out of a truck nowadays. But the ice cream truck is the OG. Now, Anderson, growing up, did you have ice cream truck experiences in your life?
I did not until I moved down to Charleston. Yeah, so over in Atlanta, I was in the suburbs as well, so I guess we didn't have one there. But yeah, once we moved down here, we had them a lot.
I would see them a lot, right? You go to the beach, obviously. That's a big spot. You get an ice cream truck there. And there's always like the Italian ice truck and everything. Anyways, we're talking a lot this week, or people are, about various ice creams in the ice cream truck because Klondike announced that they're discontinuing the Choco Taco. Now, I was always interested in the pronunciation of this. It's a lot like Reese's Pieces, right? It's pieces, but we always say Reese's Pieces, or most people say that, because it just rhymes instead of Reese's Pieces. But we know that word, how it's spelled, it's pieces. Same idea with the Choco Taco. Same idea, I guess because it rhymes, Choco Taco. But when you talk about chocolate, it's not chocolate. I mean, you may say it that way, right? But the Choco Taco? Anyways, the Choco Taco is fantastic. It was announced this week that it's going to be discontinued, and this upset a lot of people. Now, as I always say, nostalgia is a very strong thing. So maybe the Choco Taco is your go-to. It's been produced for 40 years. So this isn't some sort of millennial thing, right? I mean, they've been making Choco Tacos since the 80s, early 80s. If you're of a certain age growing up, you may have gone with the Choco Taco. I love a nice Choco Taco. But no more. And the problem is because they said, well, it's just not selling as much as it used to. People aren't into the Choco Taco. This is very disappointing. Now, I can't eat ice cream anymore, so I blame everybody else. But if you're discouraged of the Choco Taco disappearing, the question would be, where have you been? You got to be getting out to these ice cream trucks or even the grocery store. I'm sure they sell them in certain stores or gas stations. You got to be buying these Choco Tacos. But Klondike said no more with the Choco Tacos. Now, Klondike does some good things. Right, I mean, the Klondike bar, of course, is the classic. And over the years, they have added all sorts of different types of Klondike bars. I used to love the Klondike bar. In fact, if you go into the Morrow household right now, you'll probably find some not my household. I can't eat ice cream. But you go into the parents' house, you'll probably find some Klondikes in that freezer right now. Love a good Klondike. And they have added all sorts of different Klondikes over the years where you have, like, the mint chocolate chip now. Or you have, like, the Heath one. Or you have where the outside is a different type of, like, a crunch Klondike. And different flavors inside. The peanut butter, like the Reese's peanut Klondike, is delicious. Klondike also does just the cookie ice cream sandwiches and the regular ice cream sandwiches as well. And if you go to their website now, the Choco Taco is still there on the homepage, which is very, I mean, that's just throwing salt in the wound. And if you're unfamiliar, it looks like a taco. It's covered in chocolate. It's got vanilla ice cream inside with a little chocolate swirl. And on the chocolate covering also seems to be some sort of like almost nuts. I don't know if they're just peanuts or if it's hazelnut or what. Whatever is spread in there, the Choco Taco is delicious. On this Throwback Thursday, let's talk about ice cream trucks. I could tell you, growing up in the suburbs, we maybe didn't get a ton of ice cream trucks coming around, but we were very simple ice cream people. I try to tell those around here, I am not bougie, despite what Bobby may claim. And growing up, the tradition was simply just going to the gas station. My father would take myself and my brothers when we were kids to the gas station, and we would go get an ice cream, and we'd sit outside, and we'd have it, and that would be such a thrill. And my top ice creams, and you could get these in food trucks. But when you go to a food truck, you're probably trying to get something a little more special. Now, you don't go for the basic. Like, the ice cream sandwich is the old reliable. But if I'm going to an ice cream truck, I'm not settling for the old ice cream sandwich. That's what you used to have in the freezer. You go over to a friend's house, and the mother busts out all the ice cream sandwiches. You go to a birthday party, right? The ice cream sandwich is the obvious one. And they're solid, but they're small. They're not all that filling. And you've been there, you've done that. You want to get something more creative at the ice cream truck. But I'll tell you, my favorite ice creams growing up, ice cream bars we're talking. We're not talking flavors. We're not talking soft serve. But it was simply the three different types of the same ice cream. You either had the chocolate eclair, or you had the toasted almond, or you had the strawberry shortcake. And I don't know the brand who makes those ice creams. I can picture them now. I think it's Good Humor. But those are fantastic. Those are the best ones. And we used to go to the gas station growing up and get those. One of those. I had two brothers. We usually each would get a different one. But those are my go-tos. Those are the ice creams I would get every time. And I go sit outside and eat my toasted almond, and those things are delicious. Also, always loved the Flintstones push-ups. The little push-up pops. You keep those in your freezer. The Flintstones, you get those in an ice cream truck. Fantastic. But again, if I'm going ice cream truck, I'm not looking for a popsicle. You ever get one of the firecracker popsicles where it's the red, white, and blue, right, on a popsicle stick? Like, those are solid, too, but that's something you keep in the freezer. People come over in the summer. You can bust out the firecracker popsicles. When you go to an ice cream truck, you got to get ice cream. You can't do a popsicle. Maybe you were a SpongeBob popsicle guy or whatever the character may have been back in the day. You could get, like, a Mickey Mouse one. They had, like, Looney Tunes back in the day. Now SpongeBob's all the rage these days. Sometimes the nose would be like a gumball. I'm not into the character pops. They're solid, but you got to go ice cream, which is why the Choco Taco was so popular. Because when you go to an ice cream truck, you have to go with actual ice cream. And you have the old reliables, the chocolate chip cookie sandwich. You have maybe a creamsicle. You have just their old ice cream sandwich. And then, of course, you also have the drumstick, right? The waffle cones. Now, I tell you, if I go get soft serve, I don't like a cone. But if we're talking frozen ice cream and ice cream treats, the waffle cone's not bad. And the drumstick's pretty solid. Where it's the cone and it's vanilla ice cream covered in chocolate, and you got nuts on that thing as well. And now, right, oh, what a game changer. When they started to add chocolate on the inside as well, and you see these commercials nowadays, and not only is it the vanilla ice cream covered in chocolate, but now the vanilla has some chocolate inside, that's good stuff. When they added that to the ice cream truck, oh, game changer. Growing up, I also used to love to get, and I don't know why, this was a poor job by me. This was bad ice cream truck management. Bad awareness on my part. I used to get candy cigarettes as a kid. Everybody loved the candy cigarettes. You thought it made you look cool and felt older. Those things were disgusting, though. There was nothing candy about them. And I remember getting those at ice cream trucks. You could get anything in the world, all the different ice creams they have. They have that big menu outside, on the outside of the truck, and really all the menu is they just like ripped off a photo from one of the boxes and taped it on the outside of the truck. You show up to an ice cream truck, they got the corny music playing. You're looking at all the different options they have. Some of them they have to cross out. Ah, we don't have that anymore. Right, it's such a fugazi menu that they put on the side of the ice cream truck. The thing's being held together with duct tape. And every once in a while, I would waste my parents' hard-earned money. You get, all right, you have a dollar, go to the ice cream truck, get whatever you want. I'd get candy cigarettes. Oh, what a disappointment that was. And the candy cigarettes were terrible, but you'd walk around and you thought, you know, it made you look cool. Maybe you were one that would get the screwball, which was another more popsicle. It's kind of like shaved ice or Italian ice type of deal, and it'd have like the gumballs at the bottom. No, thank you. Don't waste my time at the food truck with that. Fudge pops were always solid, but, you know, those could be a mess. They start melting on you. Or the various Klondikes. But I always thought the Choco Taco was one of the best things you could get on an ice cream truck. And just in terms of ice cream bars in general, you could never go wrong with the strawberry shortcake or the toasted almond or the chocolate eclair Good Humor bars. Those are fantastic. Nowadays, I don't know, how popular are ice cream trucks nowadays? Especially with inflation, right? Back in the day, you could go get an ice cream for like a dollar at one of those things, maybe $2. Now people don't have cash with them as often. We're all a little more cautious about trying to get things out of strangers' vehicles, right? You don't want to send your kids over to even the ice cream truck. You could get ice cream anywhere in the world now. You go into a gas station, a grocery store, everywhere they got ice cream. All sorts of other options nowadays. Maybe people, you know, also kids aren't outside as often nowadays. You go to a park, they're not as busy as they once were. I'm curious what the ice cream truck business is like these days. It's got to be hurting. Maybe that's why the Choco Taco is being discontinued. People just aren't buying enough ice cream in the ice cream trucks anymore. So on this Throwback Thursday, we pour one out for one of the best treats you could ever get at an ice cream truck. The Choco Taco being discontinued this week after more than 40 years being produced by Klondike. It's not going to be the same when you walk up to that ice cream truck anymore. hoping to get your Choco Taco. You're going to have to settle for a snow cone, which is another big disappointment from the ice cream truck. We'll wrap up hour two next. It's the More Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
I tell you what, when you were a kid on a Throwback Thursday, there was nothing greater than when you heard the ice cream truck. You'd hear it from afar. And those things, I mean, you could walk faster than the ice cream truck. They're going so slow, hoping people come running towards them. But when you'd be outside, or even if you're inside and you hear the ice cream truck coming down the street, and you start yelling to your parents and asking for like a dollar in quarters or something, or $2, whatever it would be cost to go get an ice cream, and you go running outside and you catch the truck and all the kids from the neighborhood are there, and you get yourself probably a Choco Taco, there was nothing better in the middle of the dead heat of summer than when that ice cream truck rolled around the corner. Anderson, I ask you go to an ice cream truck. Did you have a go-to ice cream you'd have to get from said truck?
My two big ones were the Choco Taco.
Of course.
And the strawberry shortcake thing.
That's right.
Best two.
Absolutely.
I would occasionally throw in the little SpongeBob thing.
Yeah, that's popular.
Yeah, it was not on the same level as those other two, though.
No, see, that's the thing. When you go to an ice cream truck, you can't do a popsicle. And they got all sorts of popsicles there. Half the options are popsicles. You got to do ice cream. But absolutely, the SpongeBob one, or if you're of a certain age, like they had the Tweety originally, they had all sorts of different characters over the years. Nowadays, the past 20 years, it's been all about SpongeBob. He's been all the rage. And rightfully so. But yes, the Choco Taco's huge. Or the Good Humor Bars. Yeah, the chocolate eclair or strawberry shortcake, or I love that, toasted almond. Anything with almond in it is delicious. Since we were on the subject, I just saw New York Times had an article this week about how the ice cream trucks are disappearing because of gas prices, inflation. The price of sprinkles has doubled in the past year. A 25-pound box of sprinkles now goes for $60. So between gas prices, inflation, kids aren't out as often as they once were. Plus, you can get ice cream delivered to the house now. You don't need to wait on the ice cream truck. And if we're being honest, look, I love the ice cream truck. A lot of it's nostalgia. I can go get myself a Good Humor Bar at the ice cream truck, or I could go down the street and get the ice cream myself and put all sorts of different toppings on it, right? You go to these different ice cream places. You make your own sundaes now, or even you go to a Froyo place. You put all sorts of toppings. You put as much ice cream or yogurt as you want. It costs only a few bucks. I mean, that's probably better than waiting for the SpongeBob popsicle to come through your neighborhood. Hour 3 coming up next. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.